We're talking about the work of the Wisconsin National Guard in these unprecedented times. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers announced last week that the Guard would assist local election officials as poll workers today. Thousands of National Guard soldiers were mobilized for the April election recall. Did you face long lines in April? How do you feel about the troops filling the needs of local clerks? What questions do you have about the Guard providing community COVID-19 testing sites? What's been your experience at these free sites? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. Major General Paul Knapp commands the Wisconsin National Guard. He's also the state's senior Homeland Security advisor and oversees Wisconsin Emergency Management. Major General Knapp, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, Kate. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Overview first, if you will. There are about 10,000 soldiers and airmen in the Guard. How many are mobilized right now amid the pandemic?
So, Kate, right now we have a lot of different lines of effort. The primary one that everyone is familiar with is the specimen collection effort. We've actually reduced those numbers a little bit. We're just under 1,000 right now, directly supporting the specimen collection effort. And there are a couple of reasons for that. And the big one is the recent implementation of dynamic DITRA. I'm trying to remember the actual what that stands for. But basically, it's a computer program, an app that allows us to greatly increase our throughput at the sites. So it's been great in terms of the accuracy of getting everyone's information and getting people through the community-based testing sites, as well as it has streamlined the call center because folks are now getting emails for the negative responses, which has really taken the workload off the call center. That, in addition to, as you all know, we've got just under 700 service members out there at the polls, which just opened, and covering 40 counties and 141 municipalities.
Okay, and so are those the two central areas between specimen collection right now and at the polls?
Definitely. We also had a plan for a large presence during the Democratic National Convention,
right,
which was scheduled for next week. But as you know, that's gone entirely virtual. So now we've gone into a standby role for that. For the DNC.
Well, let's start with elections here. What are Guard members doing today at the polls?
Okay, so what the Guard members are doing out there is they're doing all of the same things that any other poll worker would do. They're not in uniform. They're in their civilian clothes. And we work very hard to get the service members from the counties in which they reside. Wisconsin law requires a poll worker to one of the things that are required is to be a resident of the county in which you're working as a poll worker. So that was one of the heavy lifts when trying to sort out the over 1,850 municipal and county clerks and what their needs were is to actually find the service members who are residents of those particular counties. And they'll look like any other poll worker out there. And they're doing whatever the county clerks need them to do in order to facilitate the election.
We're talking with Major General Paul Knapp, commands the Wisconsin National Guard. We're talking with him about the missions of the troops amid the pandemic, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Major General, how much PPE, the protective equipment, are the Guard members working with in today's election compared to what they were doing in April's election?
So PPE, PPE is still a critical item in our fight against COVID. However, the primary item that they're going to be using out there today are going to be the masks. Masks have been found to be very effective in combating the transmission of COVID, but many of the polling sites have installed plexiglass and other things. We've supported the Wisconsin Election Commission largely through the use of the Civil Air Patrol to distribute PPE and equipment, sanitizing equipment, out to the polling sites. I've got a couple of the numbers to run down here because it's pretty interesting. Over 9,700 liters of disinfectant, 21,000 bottles of hand sanitizer, 330,000 pens, 5,500 spray bottles, 120,000 masks, and 330,000 disinfecting wipes. So a lot of protective and disinfecting equipment has gone out there to the polling sites to help keep them safe.
Have they been stockpiled at a central location? How do you get all of these supplies out to all of the polling sites? Logistics.
Well, logistically, it's also a heavy lift, which is one thing that the military is well known for doing a good job at. And so, yes, all of these supplies came into a central warehouse in the Madison area. My lead for this project is Brigadier General Robin Blader, and she also has a great team under her. And we've had a good partnership with the Civil Air Patrol, and we've also used some civilian contractors to basically take an inventory of what all those 1,850 municipal clerks needed. Some of them had some items left over from the last election, and then get those requests filled and out in time. We had items going out as late as Friday and Saturday this week in order to get all those items out to the polling sites.
After April, did you do like an after-action review to find out how the Guard did at the polls and what changes you could make this time around?
Absolutely. That's one of the things we also do very well in the military is after-action reviews. And both after the April 7th election and then the May 12th special election, we took a look at things that we could do better. And a lot of the communications with the clerks, or all the communications directly with the clerks, goes through the Wisconsin Elections Commission. So we've worked hand in hand with them to basically support their needs and requirements, and also to make any necessary adjustments from last time. I think the biggest thing is just communicating with the clerks early. As you'll remember, in April, it was kind of a last minute thing. We weren't sure what was going to happen. The Wisconsin Election Commission was working through all the details. It was early on in COVID, and so we didn't have the time to prepare. Whereas this time, the WEC was able to get the surveys out early to the municipal clerks and county clerks, and so we could start preparing early as to what their needs might be, especially in terms of poll workers.
Do you find that the clerks may be more open to having National Guard as support during an election? Is there more comfort level this time around, I wonder?
Yeah, Kate, I think that's a great point. And I think there is. That, you know, the first time it was done, as far as we can tell, it was the first time it was done in the country with National Guard assistance at the polling places was on the April election. And there are a lot of uncertainties and unknowns. But I think the reports were overwhelmingly complimentary. I got tons of kudos from the clerks directly to me about our soldiers and airmen out there and the assistance that they gave. So, yes, I think that definitely made a difference. I think that throughout this COVID response, the National Guard has been huge assistance to the state of Wisconsin. Extremely proud of all the soldiers and airmen and everything that they've done in terms of operations tempo over this time. And I do think that folks are more comfortable having the Guard out there, just realizing that we're your neighbors. We all live and work in your communities, and I think the it's been an extra benefit or side benefit of our response is just getting that message out to the people of Wisconsin that we're here to help.
We're talking with the head of the Wisconsin National Guard, Major General Paul Knapp, about how troops are handling COVID-19 missions. Where do you think the Guard could help the most at this time of a health crisis? What events around the state could benefit from their presence? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we have the chief of the Wisconsin National Guard, Major General Paul Knapp, is on the line. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Guard's specimen collection teams, which we'll talk about here, continue to operate across Wisconsin, supporting local health departments to carry out COVID-19 testing. The Guard says they've collected 350,000 tests at free mobile testing sites from early April to present day. In what capacity could the Guard help serve in your community? What do you want clarity on about Guard missions? 800-642-1234 is the number. And Major General Paul Knapp stays with us. So looking at this specimen collection, what trends are you seeing in the communities that need free mobile testing sites, and how quickly can the Guard stand those up?
Yes, in terms of trends, across the state, as we know, the overwhelming trend is that community spread has increased in the last month, and that has therefore directly correlated with an increase in requests for testing. The way the process works is a county emergency manager, in conjunction with their public health personnel, make a request through the State Emergency Operations Center, and then we have a team, a specimen collection action team that takes in those requests, gets all the information that we need in terms of the request, whether it's a community-based test, some focused testing, which would be an example, would be like at a county jail, or if there's an outbreak, also could be in a congregate care setting, like a nursing home or a jail. And then they take all that information and then they bring it to the leadership group. And then we basically approve those and then rack and stack them for when they can be scheduled based on the availability of the teams. Our teams are very mobile and agile. We can take a team of 30 who can collect upwards of 1,000 tests at a community-based test site in a day, or we can take as little as 7 service members to go out to a smaller facility and really respond within a day or two if there's an outbreak.
Let's bring in a call now. Derek is joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Derek.
Hi.
Hi.
So I was wondering what happens to the people that are tested positive. Are they just let go, or do they quarantine them or send them to the hospital? What happens to them if they test positive?
Hey, Derek, that's a great question. And obviously the whole purpose of the testing is to find those people who are positive and isolate them and make sure that they get the health care that they need. So I mentioned the negatives earlier, getting an email, and I didn't mention the positives because that is where our focus is. And so then what happens is there's a couple different ways on how they can get notified. Sometimes we notify the positives through the state call center. And then they would give that individual the information that they need in order to get in touch with their local healthcare provider or health resources in their county. And then the public health folks in the county that they or the municipality that they live in actually check up on them throughout the course of their 14-day isolation. And then the other huge part is contact tracing. Really important. A person who's positive will get interviewed and we'll try and figure out where they may have been and who they may have been in close contact with so that we can contact those folks as well and get them quarantined if they don't have symptoms or aren't positive or isolated if they were to test positive for COVID.
Have there been shortages of testing kits in communities?
So in terms of our testing through the Wisconsin National Guard, we've had a very good supply. As you may have read in the news lately, that there is a shortage, a national shortage of reagent for test kits, and that has affected some of the private healthcare providers across the state. And we're trying to help in augmenting that capacity as well. But as the numbers of positives have increased across the United States, it has increased the strain on supplies for test kits.
We're talking with Major General Paul Knapp, commands the Wisconsin National Guard. We're looking at its mission in this time of pandemic crisis, taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Major General, when you look at communities and how they set up these free testing sites, oftentimes the images you see of are this backlog of cars just waiting in line. Are there different site approaches that you've seen that work better in terms of where you hold these testing sites?
Yes. Great question, and hopefully that the images that you're seeing are from file footage back in April and May, because today with the all of the advances that we've made in how we set up our sites, and then as I mentioned, the DTRA, which I do have a note as Dynamics Testing and Registration Application, it has greatly increased the speed and the throughput of these sites. So we design the sites based on first the layout and what we have available. So if we're at a fairgrounds, whether it's an indoor drive-through, whether we have walk-ups, everyone is designed a little bit differently, but we have a great template that we've perfected over the last 5 months in getting these community-based testing sites set up and operated. And really these days, if you were to go out today to some of the more busy sites in Milwaukee or Madison, you would find wait times well under an hour. In fact, I had reports of 25 minutes from start to finish in Dane County last week.
I want to turn to the National Guard activated when police clashed with protesters during the Black Lives Matter protests. What was the role of your soldiers?
So our number one role in a civil disturbance operation is to support local law enforcement. The thing that I tell my soldiers and airmen is we're there to keep people safe. We're out there to protect the safety and assist local law enforcement in making sure that people can exercise their First Amendment rights to free speech. That's our primary mission when we're activated in support of local law enforcement.
In late June, the governor called up the Guard's quick reaction force after statues were toppled and a state senator was assaulted. What is this force in particular?
So all National Guards across the 54 states and territories have a National Guard reaction force, which is made up of 500 soldiers and airmen. And it's for exactly what we described, so that we have a shorter timeline and a recall capability so that we can be available in a short amount of time. As you can imagine, with the National Guard, most of us have other jobs and careers outside of our participation and service in the National Guard. So the quick reaction force, what that is that's the first 125 of that 500 number that I gave you. And those are on a shorter timeline. I'll always say that it depends, but it's generally about a 12-hour reaction from the time that they're notified till the time that they'd be available for that first 125 soldiers and airmen.
How was it decided to use tear gas and rubber bullets on protesters?
So that was not our decision, and we did not play a role at all in making that decision, or did we employ any of those non-lethal arms.
Let's bring in Rita now in Green Bay. Hi, Rita.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I just want to appreciate our young men and women in the National Guard. I have young friends that do that. I'm currently approaching 60, but in great health. But I just left my polling place number 4. Very excited about that. But the idea of having our young men and women at our polling stations, I think, is a great civic lesson, bringing them to a polling place to see democracy in action, where they can see their community expressing their viewpoint. Some of them, maybe they haven't voted, maybe they haven't been politically active. Also, the ability to alleviate the long day stress on some of our seniors. If we say that we're putting them at risk with excessive exposure, then our young men and women have the ability to alleviate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rita. So civics in action, Major General.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks, Rita, for the shout out and your appreciation for the National Guard. I'll echo that as well. And it is. It's great. And it's a great demonstration for the young soldiers and airmen, as well as everyone else. And we really, in this COVID environment, we've really had to take a look at our poll worker volunteer force, which is largely the older Americans who participate as volunteers. And I think we're obviously, as you can see, shifting toward a younger demographic for that. And I think that can do nothing but help our democracy.
Very quickly, on the issue of federal funding, the government reduced funding for National Guard deployments. How will that funding cut affect the Guard's work in Wisconsin?
So that will not affect our work right now. We have the state is going to continue to use the National Guard, the state and Governor Evers, in its current role at our current capacity. And it's a 75-25 cost share split right now. And it's on the political side, they're determining how that's actually going to work out. But I know that we have CARES Act funding, also federal dollars that we can use for that state match.
Major General Knapp, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks, Kate, for having me. If I could just say one thing, I just encourage everyone to get out there and vote. Thank your poll workers, whether they're Guard members or not, and check in on someone. It's a tough time we're going through right now during COVID, and I'd like everybody to just look out for each other.
Major General Paul Knapp commands the Wisconsin National Guard. We'll be back after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're checking in on the pandemic in Waukesha County as reported cases of COVID-19 continue to rise. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. As of yesterday, there were 4,299 positive cases in the suburban Milwaukee County. Do you live in Waukesha County? What concerns you about how the virus is spreading? How do you feel about the statewide mask mandate and the approach your county is taking with it? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Paul Farrow is Waukesha County Executive. He coordinates and directs all administrative and management functions of the county, and he's a former state lawmaker. Paul, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, describe the situation that you see in Waukesha County right now amid COVID.
Well, as you said, we saw an uptick in cases in July, and we are continuing to work through the increase that we've seen. The one underlying issue that we haven't seen an increase in is hospitalizations. And I think that's when we kind of go back to the beginning in March, and they talked about flattening the curve. We knew that there was going to be eventually a time where we'll see a case increases in Waukesha County. Our focus has been within the county is making sure that our healthcare organizations, our hospitals, can maintain the services to those that need the care, especially those in the ICU or those really afflicted. And then the other thing that we've been working on, too, is the contact tracing, following up with people that are tested positive to ensure that they're following the proper guidelines to quarantine themselves to reduce that spread.
Okay, so what you're saying is the virus is spreading in Waukesha County, but hospitals are not taxed at this moment.
Correct.
What do health officials think is causing the recent uptick in cases?
When we've been looking at the numbers and working with the public health department, the main thing that we can come up with is it's summertime. People, if you look back about the middle of June, people started getting out in congregating more in a typical format than they were the first couple of months of this situation where they're really kind of hunkering down. And so we've been trying to get the message out to people to continue with the 6 feet of separation. If you can't keep 6 feet of separation, put on a mask, make sure that you're reducing that spread wherever you can and keep that separation going. And that is the message that we've continued out. We kind of knew that there was going to be an increase as everything opened up in the summer. We were looking for what that impact was going to be. It was a little bit higher than the projections that we had set in for July. But we're looking at the same thing as we get ready for school September and October. We're starting to figure in those numbers of what the projection are. We're trying to get people to realize now is the time to make decisions on how it's going to affect the fall. If your typical families are going to go out on vacation right before they go back to school, We're asking people to think about what they're doing to reduce their potential for getting the COVID virus and for spreading the virus, so that we'll be prepared in the fall to have the schools open up, to give the kids the opportunity to get back into their educational programs and keep moving forward.
How do you form projections? How do you project out?
A lot of it is just trying to go through the numbers that we have right now and look at typical models that are out there for kind of disease tracking and disease information that we have. Some of it is based on earlier data that we've had for different situations like the H1N1 virus. So we can see some models that are out there. And then we look at internally, how are we seeing with the projection of the numbers that we had going from March, April, May through June? What are we seeing as there's a ramp up? And then can we predict forward on this? And that's where having good data, having consistent data from not only the state, but the hospitals is important for us to have. And as you know, about 2 weeks ago, we had a challenge with the hospitalization numbers when the information was changed in their data reporting from the CDC to the Department of Health and Human Services at the national level. So there was some fluctuation that occurred there. There's some fluctuation that occurred along at the state level as they've changed up some of the modeling that they're doing.
Well, let's bring in a call. Now, Holly is joining us from Waterford. Hi, Holly.
Good morning.
Hi. Go ahead.
I have a question. I was diagnosed with the virus on August 1st. They were fantastic. It was in Burlington, Wisconsin. I have a question, though. I don't know when I should go back to get retested, for I do have symptoms. My chest still hurts. Everything is different every hour of the day, and it's been like 10 days since I've had it.
And, Holly, you're wondering when you should go back and get retested.
Correct. They did tell me, I am clear if I just have coughing, so...
Yeah.
I'm in phase on when I should go back. Obviously, if I have symptoms, do I go back?
Holly, thanks. Yeah, Paul, go ahead.
So, Holly, what I would say is that the best course of action for you, if it's been 10 days, is to contact your personal physician and kind of get an evaluation from them. What we look at typically right now is about a 14-day infection age or timeline that's out there. We're saying that people are clear if they're 3 days with no symptoms, no fever, or if they're tested and are 3 days free. So it'd be one of those where, again, we always recommend you follow up with your personal physician. It sounds like you still have some of the symptoms, so you'll want to make sure that those are being treated properly. Holly, I would reach out to them, find out what their recommendation is, and then follow their track as well.
Holly, thank you. Paul, when you talk with hospitals, do they have enough personal protective equipment like the gloves and the masks and enough of other supplies and shields?
Yeah, they are, as we said, the goal would be to have about 3 or 4 weeks worth of inventory on hand. Most of them are a couple of weeks out. We've got a few of the hospitals that are, as I say, kind of a one-week-to-week type of thing where they're getting the inventory in, almost like a just-in-time situation where as they're running out, they're getting resupplied. We're starting to see an increase in the PPE availability, which has been helpful. I know as the Major General talked about, we've been working with the states to send out PPE to the first responders in the county and work with hospitals to gather that in. But that is one of the challenges that we continue to look at as we kind of prepare for what might happen in the fall. Do we have enough PPE? Do we have enough testing and reagent that we'll be able to maintain the levels that we're looking for?
So you mentioned schools earlier. How are you working with your schools ahead of fall? What is the situation for opening?
Yeah, we have been in contact with the majority of the school districts in Waukesha County for the last 6.5 weeks. We've been working with them on a weekly basis to kind of formulate the plans. You know, and as you know, with nothing coming from the states, it's kind of on the school districts themselves to create the plan that they feel is going to be most effective for their students. What we're doing from the county perspective is providing that support network. So we're still working on, in fact, right as I speak, we're talking about a new contact tracing program that we're developing with the schools so we can regionalize kind of a response team for this two or three school districts. We'll have one team that's going to be working with them throughout the year. And then the other thing that we're looking at, too, is our data. We're probably going to be changing up our information on our dashboard to help the schools see what's going on within their districts in regards to the spread of the virus and other information that we can provide.
Oh, so it would be pulled apart a little more specific for the district itself?
Correct.
Yeah. Carry on. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we're really trying to work with them. When you talk to the majority of the superintendents and the feedback they're getting, there is a lot of anxiety, as we know, about bringing the kids back to school. There are a lot of people that prefer having them in school. They think that's the best way to do it if we can provide a safe environment.
We're talking
and I think
with
that's what we're working with.
We're talking with Paul Farrow, Waukesha County Executive, looking at the virus spread in the suburbs of Milwaukee. And you can join in. Do you live in Waukesha County? How do you feel about the spike in cases? Does it concern you? And parents, do you have kids that attend school in the county? What are your thoughts on the initiative to open? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Paul, as you work on the contact tracing element and the regional response effort to it, help us understand who is staffing this and what are the goals and priorities in a regional approach to contact tracing?
Yeah, well, Kate, it's still almost countywide that the approach is when it comes to the contact tracing. Each health department kind of has their own contact tracing organization. As you know, Milwaukee County is unique to most of the state. They have, I believe, 19 public health officials. It's almost by municipality rather than as Waukesha County is. We have one public health officer for the entire county. So our contact tracing, when you think about a typical year, let's go back to 2019, we have less than 15 individuals that work in the contact tracing area of public health, the nurses and that do disease investigation, do the follow-up calls. We are well over 100 employees that we now have that are doing the contact tracing. We're in fact, right now, ramping up, we have 30 employees that are going through disease investigation and contact tracing training to be ready to go next week. And so that was a part of an agreement that we signed with Carroll University. It's a great partnership that we've developed. They do the virtual training for us for contact tracing and disease investigation. It's two different levels. If you think about it, the disease investigator is your first call. When we get a positive result from a test, they contact that individual to start getting the background information, kind of like the Major General was saying, finding out where they've been, who they may have been in contact. Then they hand that information off to our contact tracers, who then follow up with those people that have been around a test positive, saying, here's what you need to do. You need to watch for any type of symptoms, get tested, but here's the procedure that you should be looking at as we're working forward on this.
So how has Carroll University approached the pandemic, and how are you working with a university in your county?
Yeah, Carroll has kind of done the same thing. They're looking at how do they provide in-person education for their students. I know they've made decisions where, like, the dorm rooms are down to single-person dorms instead of shared or quads. In fact, they are working with a local hotel to provide more rooms for the students throughout the year. And I think they've really taken that approach of how do we still bring the kids back onto the campus but provide that level of safety. And then when you look at the partnership we have with them, I think it's a great opportunity. We'll have students that are going through some of their health programs at the university who will be working with us here at Public Health. So they'll be getting some real-time experience and some experience that most people don't realize is so needed in the world, in the counties and the region, in public health. You know, we don't just supply contact tracing. We are there as a clinic for individuals that don't have a physician or in the poverty level that need that specific care and that special care to help out We provide all of those different areas within public health. And so they're getting an opportunity to see how all that works out as well.
Paul Farrow is Waukesha County Executive, learning about how his community is addressing a surge in cases. What do you think we can do to stop the spread of the coronavirus? Is it masks? Is it restrictions on businesses? What is your county seeing as far as spread? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow. We're hearing about how his county is handling a recent influx of positive coronavirus cases, how it's ramping up contact tracing in the suburbs of Milwaukee. Paul, let's look at the issue of masks. You've decided that Waukesha County will not enforce the statewide mandate to wear masks. What can you tell us there?
Well, when you think about it, Kate, there's two components to that. There was, when the governor instituted the mask mandate on August 1st, we had been spending probably 2 weeks prior getting people, or 3 weeks prior, getting people to realize the importance of masks. And the one thing I kept telling everyone is, when it comes to mandating a mask from a state or a county level, what is the enforcement vehicle that we are going to use? Typically, it's law enforcement. And in that situation, do we want to pull law enforcement away from what their main purpose is, providing public safety, to go out and enforce people wearing a mask? Or do we use an educational system? Do we get people to realize the personal responsibility, the ability that we have to work with one another and respect one another, to wear masks when we can't have that 6 feet of separation? And that's what we're working through. And I think the key that people have to understand is, when you look at the spread of the virus, separation is the most important thing. When we've talked about this from the beginning, we've talked about keeping the vulnerable populations separated so that they don't contract the disease as readily as if they're just out in the general public. If you get sick and you are tested positive or you feel you're symptomatic, you should quarantine yourself, contact your personal physician, but again, take steps to separate yourself from others so that you don't have the spread.
So even if masks could save lives, you're saying it really comes down to a personal decision and making good choices about, you know, distancing and so forth.
Well, what I'm saying is, again, it's separation. Yes, we still have to make those decisions. But we were talking about 6 feet of separation and working through 6 feet of separation. The governor, for a number of weeks, said, I'm never going to put one in. For whatever reason, I'm not going to put it in. And then arbitrarily decides to put it in without having a system that he can truly enforce what he's doing. And when you look at the majority of the counties throughout Wisconsin, the sheriffs, and the sheriff here came out and made the same statement, that they're not going to enforce the mandate by going out and arresting people. And as you know, the sheriff is a duly elected position. He and I had a conversation and talk, but it's his decision on if he was going to enforce it or not. My point was, why do we put a mandate in place when we have businesses that are already starting to put situations in? When you look at the retail world, they can set up in the markets that we work in how they want their businesses to interact. Private businesses were doing the same thing. When you look at the majority of businesses in Waukesha County, most of them had a mask requirement for their employees depending on different areas. But to arbitrarily come in and say, anytime you're indoor in a public space, you have to have a mask on, causes some challenges. You know, when we look at the county building and the operations that we have here, we had already put in a number of restrictions and a number of changes physically to barriers between the public and our employees to provide them still perfect interaction with the employees, but keeping them safe. And so all of that was kind of thrown out the window because the mandate came in and said, you must do this, not taking into account all the things that companies that have already been put into place, businesses that have already been put into place to help alleviate this. You know, and I think when I look at the whole situation, what we're working through in the county is we've kind of gone backwards in how this was approached from March. when you think about the majority of situations that occur, we have a ramped up approach.
But do you see masks when you go out around Waukesha County?
Yes, all the time. I would say the majority of the public in Waukesha County are using masks.
You know, and it's not due to the mandate?
No, I don't believe it's due to the mandate. I think it was people that were doing it beforehand. I think there are some people that are looking at, okay, well, there is a mandate that's in place, so I'll wear the masks. But I don't believe we'll ever achieve the 95% across the entire state the governor was looking for as a mandate requirement.
Well, let's take a call. Now, Jean is joining us from Madison. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. This is a great show. Mr. Farrell, very interesting discussion this morning. But I do have a few questions that have been weighing on my mind. We have regulations that require restaurants to be inspected. And there's a reason for that. I mean, we would like to assume that every restaurant owner is very careful and pays attention to proper temperatures and dishwashing and temperatures and cooking. But we have decided that it's very important to have some oversight of that process to protect public health, even though we all know 99% of restaurant owners are good citizens and care very deeply. We also have rules on our highways about speeding. Most citizens don't speed, but there are some people who speed. Therefore, we have sheriffs, state patrol officers who try to protect people from their own foolish choices. I think that we could put public health around the virus in this same category. Most people exercise personal responsibility and care, but there are some people who don't, and they put everyone else at risk. So I'm curious why we should have some requirements for restaurants and speeding that we don't have for a pandemic that is deadly.
Jean, thank you. Paul?
Well, Jean, I appreciate the call, and I guess I'll put it kind of two ways to you. One, when you look at the rules that are usually set forth for the public health for restaurants, when it comes to hygiene, when it comes to care, there is a system that is in place, if it's at the state level or at the county level, for ordinance to pass through the legislative body, our county supervisors, and then myself to sign it in the ordinance into action. Same at the state level. The problem with this mandate that the governor has is when you look at the reasoning behind it, there isn't the true science as to why we're doing this. And I know that everybody says, and we hear it, and there's arguments on both sides, masks do work. And I agree with that. But the challenge comes into when you put a rule into place, usually you look at how are you going to enforce it.
I don't understand when you say true science. What do you mean by that?
If you look at the executive order in which the governor put forth, one of the reasons that he was saying that we were requiring masks is because there was an uptick in hospitalization rates, but left no information on what that uptick was. When you look at what's happening in HERC 7, which is part of the region that has been most affected by Wisconsin, which is the southeast region, the increase since the mask mandate a week before it went into place has been lower than it was peak out, I believe it was back in May. And so we're not seeing the uptick that I would say is an area that we have a grave situation that we have to move something forward on. When you look at one of the other areas that the governor talked about was the fatalities, trying to reduce the number of fatalities. The number that he put into his emergency order is at a level that is almost twice what we have seen throughout this entire pandemic. And so looking at data that we're trying to come up with is we're looking at what we do at the county. The last thing I want to do is increase the level of anxiety people are having, saying that we need to reduce a spread of a virus without having actual information that I can say, let me show you what's happening, here's what's going on right now.
Very quickly, before time runs out here, do you anticipate the National Guard will stand up more testing sites? What is the status of community testing in your county?
Well, we have a testing site going on today with the National Guard, and we are super appreciative when they come out and help us. I know we have another one that we're looking at. And as the Major General said, we're also working through with Election Day. We have a number of the Guards members here in the county that are helping out with that. My understanding is the state is the one that kind of initiates where the testing is and limits the number of test kits that are available at each location. And I believe beginning in the middle of September, they are standing down from 40 teams to 11 teams to do the testing throughout the state. So I think there's going to be a challenge there as we see, and as the Major General said, we're seeing a reduction in the test kits availability at the private level, which is what we've been working with here in the county. So that's going to be a challenge as we move forward.
Paul, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Paul Farrow is Waukesha County Executive. Just ahead, we discuss the medical ethics of vaccines with the director of the Global Health Program at the Council on Foreign Relations. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.